All right, we are at the end of Perek Gimel, the end of chapter 3, Pasuk Yud Daled. The Perek, remember, was focusing on the elevation of Yehoshua, as there's this miracle that happens for him, like what happened for Moshe. The use of the Kohanim to demonstrate the miracle as they carry the Aron. We talked about whether they're really supposed to carry the Aron normally or whether it's normally Levium. And we didn't really talk about it much, but there's another element to this, which is the Aron representing Hashem. The whole idea that the Torah, the presence of the Luchas, sort of represents God. So that when the Aron hits the Yarden, God is really the one, even though we said it's credited to Yehoshua, God is the one who's splitting the Yarden. And I'm not actually sure, come to think of it. That was what I was saying in the middle of the sentence. And I'm actually starting to wonder. The symbolism of the Luchos splitting the Yarden. I just said that it's like Hashem is splitting the Yarden. Hashem's presence is with the Luchos. And that's certainly borne out, I suppose, by the fact that in the Mishkan, Hashem is manifest over the Aron. But is it true? Luchas are in the Aron, right?
Oh, okay.
So there's the debate about whether there's one Aron or two Aronos, which Luchas are in which Aron. But let's assume for the moment, because they're not mentioning a second Aron, that there's one Aron and it's got everything in it. What are we supposed to take away from the idea that when the Aron reaches the water splits? What is that? What's the message there?
The Aron has more power.
Like right into the Lost Ark?
Yeah. I don't know. It's like something special about it, or it's with God, or it's right. Like God's... It's
right.
Like his manifestation of his...
Yeah, and that's one possibility, but I'm just thinking now that there's a whole other way you could take this that probably makes more sense in the context of everything we've seen in Yehoshua. What's the promise to Yehoshua? I will be with you, God says, if you keep the Torah, right? If you keep God's command. The nation says to Yehoshua, we will be with you if you keep to God's command, which is embodied in
Luchos.
So maybe the message isn't what I first thought. Maybe the message isn't, it's sort of Hashem is splitting the Yarden, but rather the image is, this is what happens when you stick to the Torah. Look what the Torah is capable of doing. Observe the Torah and miracles will happen.
But isn't that a theme throughout, like a lot of other things also? And doesn't that happen, if I'm remembering from way back learning Yehoshua, that's like it repeats itself. It's like when you don't, bad things happen. And then when you do, God forgives and... Again, he does these miracles, and it's this whole vicious cycle.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's... that's what I'm just thinking now. I mean, when I started...
There was also some example that they need to see, right? They need to see the miracle. We can't see Hashem, but if we see something that Hashem is doing right there with the Luchos, and this is his...
Yeah. So, I think the visual is certainly very important for them. But it's it's an idea at any rate. Whether it's right or not, I can't say, but I think it's a good message. Okay, so we're up to now Pasuk Yudalet, sentence 14. Vayihi bin sama ha'amame ahalehem lavoris hayarden. So it was when the nation left their tents to cross the Yarden, which is like the third time they've already left their tents, right? They gathered in front of the Aron last week, they got out to get towards the Yarden, fine. And it was when they did this, v'akohanim nosei ha'aron habris lifnei ha'am. The Kohanim, carriers of the Aron of the Covenant, are in front of the nation. Okay. Uchvo nosei ha'aron ad ha'yardain, when the bearers of the Aron came to the Yarden, v'raglei ha'kohanim nosei ha'aron nitbilu b'ktzei ha'mayim, the feet of the Kohanim, carriers of the Aron, were dipped into the edge of the water, and here I think we do mean the eastern side, we talked about last week what the edge of the Yarden means, v'ha'yardain malei al kol gedosav kol yamei katsir. The Yarden was full to overflowing. It was over its banks, the entire time, the entire season of the harvest. What are we emphasizing here?
That's a miracle.
Right. It isn't just that, it happened to be a bad time for it. The Arden is full. Pasuk Yud Dalit, Pasuk Yud Tet Zayin, sentence 16. Vayamdu Hamayim, Hayordim Milamala, Kamuneid Echad. So the water descending from above stood as one pile. The water is piling up. We talked about last week whether it's what a neid exactly is, but call it a pile for our purposes. Harchek ma'od be'adam ha'ir ha'shemitzad tzarsan. We said it was distant from the city Adam. Adam does not mean person. Adam means the city. It was a certain city, which is next to Tzartan, which emphasized the fact that it didn't. The water didn't spread out the way you'd expect it to if it's blocked by a barrier, but instead the water stays behind the barrier. Whatever was descending to the Dead Sea, it simply was cut off. And so all the water that was descending already goes down and the rest of the water remains up. And the people cross opposite Yericho. And finally, Vayamdu Akohanim Nos Eha Aron Bris Hashem Becharava Besoch Hayardain Hachain. Last sentence in chapter 3. The Kohanim, carriers of the Aron of Hashem's covenant, stand in the dry land in the middle of the Yardain Hachain, established. V'chol Yisrael Ovrim Becharava, and all Israel passes in the dry land, Arasher Tamu Kol Hagoy Laboris Hayardain, until the entire nation had finished crossing the Yarden. Okay?
So they went in front of the Aron. They left the Aron, stayed there, and they...
Okay. Correct. Unclear, we said last week, whether the Aron actually stayed on the eastern side of the Yarden where it started, or went all the way to the western side of the Yarden. That is not so clear. But either way, they're crossing in front of the Yarden. In front of the Aron. Right. So there are actually two miraculous elements here.
The water. So stop.
Well, yeah.
Well, the water opening up, and the water and the water staying.
And not flooding.
Is that the same thing?
I'm counting them as the same thing, but in Pasuk Yud Zayin, there's a second element. Malvin points this out.
How is it dry underneath there? It should be still wet. The water should be wet. Yeah.
It's entirely dry. God says, I want to make this as easy as possible. For them, we saw the same idea regarding Yam Suf. The Jews crossed through the sea on dry land. So the same thing happens over here. But Ralbag notes something else. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source number one. I left the outline part at the top of the page just because I think it might be useful. So if you take a look at number one, well, to give that impression, you'd have to print fewer sheets. But if you take a look at number one, this is from Ralbag, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gershom, and his commentary. Remember that Ralbag, well, I'll leave Ralbag for another time. There's a lot to talk about with Ralbag. But let's take a look at what he has to say here. When he talks about this miracle, he highlights something that is not something you notice at first, but he zeroes in on it. Kavar hodiya lahem Yehoshua zehamo face terem bo'o. Yehoshua told them about this miracle before it happened, right? We saw last week, he told them this is what's going to happen. V'yied lahem zman. And not only that, but he set a time for it. What was the time? V'hu sheka asher yanuchu kapos rakler kohanim nosei ha'aron b'mei ha'yardein. He said that when the feet of the kohanim hit the yardein, b'rega ha'hu yikarsun mei ha'yardein. At that moment, the Yarden would split. So he called the shot. He said, it's going to happen whenever the Kohanim enter. He also told them that as soon as the Kohanim remove their feet from the Yarden will be restored to the way it was. He says, this time frame is not defined. Meaning, if you were to ask Yehoshua in advance, how long will the sea split? What kind of an answer could he give?
However long it takes.
Right. I don't know. I have a couple of million people. They're crossing. I give you some vague numbers. Right. How are you going to do that? So he says that time frame is an unbounded time frame. Ki efsher sheyez manavor ha'am hayardein aroch im yavru b'matun. He says it could be. It'll take a long time if they're going to cross patiently. Okasar miyavrubim mihirus. On the other hand, it could be short if they cross quickly. The same thing is true in terms of when the Kohanim are going to arrive at the Yarden. Hine haya ze magdil inyan hapela hazeh umesir hasafek bo meharo im oso. He says that increases the miracle and removes doubts from the hearts of the onlookers. Kim amar echad sheyoshua hayodeya zman hikareis hayarden. If someone would say, well, Yoshua knew there's a certain time during the day, during the season, whatever it is, that the Yarden splits. He has a weather forecast and he understands when it's going to dry up and how much time will last before fresh water comes in or whatever it is, whatever you could imagine. So he says that could cause a little bit of doubt regarding the miracle. He says, since Yeshua doesn't give a set time, but rather he gives times that could be adjusted, that leaves no room for doubt. It's clear that this is in fact a miracle. That this is in fact something that wasn't just, he knew the Yarden would dry up at this point. You follow?
Yep.
So it's an added element. It reminded me of a comment that Ibn Ezra makes regarding the Makkah of Tzfardea. If you remember the Makkah of Tzfardea, right? Frogs here, frogs there, frogs were jumping everywhere. So when does the Makkah end? How does it end? Moshe says to Paro, "His pa'er olai, take some glory for yourself on me." What does that mean? He continues, he says, tell me when the Tzfardea should stop. And I'll bow into Hashem and they'll stop. He gives it to Paro to take the glory for himself and say, I was the one who stopped the Makkah. I said it should stop at this time and it stopped at this time. He gives Paro that option. But what he's also doing is he's saying, I know what you think. You think that I knew about some, you know, plague of frogs that are going to come out of the river at a certain time and so on. Well, I'll tell you what. You tell me when you want it to end, and it's going to end then. Demonstrating to Paro that it's really not about it's not about that at all. It's not that he knew, you know, this is when the frogs are going to come out. And the proof that this is an idea in why Moshe gives him the time frame, why Moshe allows Paro to do it, is in Paro's response. Because what does Paro say to Moshe? He doesn't say what I would have said if I was in Paro's shoes, which is, how about now, right? Instead he says, Limachar, how about tomorrow? Tomorrow? Who asks for a Makkah to end tomorrow? And the truth is, if you look at the Makos, there's a theme with the word Machar throughout. Machar Yah. There are all sorts of Machar references. But take a look at Ibn Ezra, who makes the comment in source number 2. Vayomer lemachar, Amar Rav Shmuel ben Chofni, Rav Shmuel ben Chofni, who was one of the Gaonim from the city of Sura. So he said, Ein min haka adam levakesh, rak sheyasur hamaka mimenu miyad. He says, people only request that Maka leave them now. V'chashav paro, ki ma'areches koch ve'ashamayim hevi'a hatzifar de'im al Mitzrayim. Paro thought that it was all about constellations and forces, and that's how the frogs came out of Mitzrayim, out of the Yehor, I should say, out of the river. Moshe hayodei hazeh, and that Moshe had simply been aware of that. V'chashav Paro ki ata higia eis sur hatzafar v'im, and Paro figures Moshe is talking to me now because Moshe knows that the frogs are going to leave now, and he would like to take credit for it, and therefore he's coming to me and making the show. So he said, let's see what happens now if I give him a longer time. And he said, tomorrow instead. And that's part of Paro's whole complex and between him and God. And his, there's more within Paro that explains why he would do this. But that's the same idea here of demonstrating the validity of the miracle by calling the shot and saying when it's going to happen in such a way that no one can doubt what this is really about. Follow? Okay. So that concludes Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel was all about the miracle and the grandeur of the miracle and the lessons learned from the miracle and playing up Yeshua and so on. Perek Dalet is about stones. That's what Perek Dalet is about. The fourth chapter of Yeshua is all about 12 stones and themes of unity and tribalism, and it's really a remarkable parak with a lot to teach. Sorry? Okay. So in order to understand this parak, though, you actually have to see parak. You have to go back to Devarim, parak Chav Zayin. The first eight psukim in parak Chav Zayin. Yes, in Devarim. Devarim parak Chav Zayin.
Sorry, which
color? Chav Okay, Moshe is giving the Jews instructions about what they are supposed to do when they cross the Yarden. Right? Someone want to read out the
translation?
Sorry? We're going to start from Pasuk Aleph. It begins just with Moshe instructing, but still, it's worthwhile. Someone can read out the English?
The English?
Yeah, because I don't want to ask someone to read out the Hebrew. That's not polite. So, yeah, someone can read out the
Hebrew. We've got amazing Hebrew speakers.
Yeah, we had a rule at our Seder. We would invite anybody and everybody, and we rotated for Magid. So Magid would go around the table for everybody doing a little bit. And we said that everybody should read in the English. And the reason was because, yes, five people may be able to read in English, and then the sixth person may be able to read in Hebrew, but the sixth person is going to be uncomfortable. They now stand out. So I'm going to ask for someone to read the English.
Are you sure we can all read English?
You can do French if you like. We're in Canada.
That's American.
Yeah. All right. TK, the American, read the English, please.
Moshe ben Israel commanded the people, saying, "Observe the entire commandment that I command you on this day. It shall be on this day that you cross the Yarden to the land of Hashem, your God, who gives you, and you shall set up gray stones, and you shall coat the stones with plaster. You shall inscribe on them all the words of the Torah when you cross over, so that you may enter the land of Hashem, your God, gives you a land flowing with milk and honey, as Hashem, the God of your forefathers, spoke about you. It shall be when you cross the Yarden that you shall erect these stones, of which I command you today, on Mount Ebal. You should coat them with plaster. There you shall build an altar for Hashem, your God, an altar of stones. You shall not raise an iron upon them. Of whole stones shall be built the altar of Hashem, your God, and you shall bring them upon burnt offerings to Hashem, your God. You shall slaughter peace offerings and eat there, and you shall be glad before Hashem, your God. You shall inscribe on these stones all of the words of the Torah well clarified, of this Torah well clarified."
Was that it for Pasuk Chet?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. So they are told numerous times. By the way, that was an excellent.
She has different words than me.
She has a larger book, so it probably explains more.
Is Moshe talking to Yeshua here, or to the
Moshe? Sorry, they're stuck on rejoicing versus being glad. Sorry, Ruth, what?
Taking
up
stones and putting
some plaster on them. They're doing
a lot of plastering, too. And you're writing the Torah
on them.
So,
it's entirety and clarity.
So that's what it sounds like, isn't it?
Without iron.
Well, that's not break the stones.
You think. Wait.
How big are
the iron is for which stones?
The altar of stones.
The altar stones. Are the altar stones the same ones as the ones with the Torah on it?
No.
I don't know. I'm asking the question.
I think there's ones of the stones.
Well, in that case, it's going to be a very long day. Right? You have to take the stones, you have to build the Mizbeach out of them, then you have to write the Torah on it.
Right.
I don't know, it's when you get that involved.
I presume if they do it without iron, it's going to take longer as well.
If you don't get it without iron, it just means that you're using whole stones. You're not carving.
Sorry. It's pretty heavy. You need a painter.
Well, where are the stones coming from?
What are they writing on?
What does it say? What does it say the stones are coming from? These stones. What are these?
Bring the stones. With them across the Yarden?
Does it say that?
No, but if they're referring
yes,
to them.
Yeah, it says. What does
Be'er Heitev means to explain it well.
Yeah.
But the Medrash on that says, what does Be'er Heitev mean? And it suggests in 70 languages, meaning that you have to write it in every language that people will understand it. That's an awful lot of writing.
How long are they going to be there?
You have to write it on a stone.
Okay. Not to mention, what's the with the plaster? Is the plaster on them before or after you write?
It sounds like before, because it sounds like you plaster them.
And then you write them on here. When it's wet, when it's wet,
you can write it in the
plaster.
Right, so this is all part of, these are all good questions. I mean, but this isn't going to be a shiur about Parshas Kisavo, but yeah. Kisavo. But the message that we're getting here is that you're going to set up at least one set of stones, if not more than one set of stones. Maybe both Mizbeach and the writing are on one set, maybe they're two different sets. We're actually going to talk about that later. In terms of what's written on the stones, that's actually a debate in its own right. I did a share at the Bayit on Shavuos night last year on what's written on these stones, and it's not clear cut whether it's a digest of the Torah, whether it's Sefer Devarim, whether it's a Dibra, like what's going on to the stones that are there. But the reason I look at this is because this is what the Jews know. Right now, they've already been told that there's something involving stones that they're going to have to bring somehow, from where? Unclear to me, to Har Eval, where they're supposed to camp and build a Mizbeach and write out the Torah. And why they're writing the Torah on stones is a question in its own right. They did have parchment. So that's that's all going to have to feed into this. I would think. So... what we're going to see here in this perek is that there will be three different, not just in this perek actually, going forward, there are going to be three different roles that stones are going to play on this trip. The only question is how many sets of stones are involved. So in this perek, we're going to learn that they're going to set up a monument in the Yarden, like in the water itself. Except there's no water there, but there will be water there.
In the dry land.
But that's what we're going to see. That's going to be in this perek. We're also going to see them take stones out of the Yarden. It will only be in the end of the eighth perek that we will hear about two other uses of these stones, one being to build a Mizbeach, one being to record the Torah, and we'll have to figure out whether it's one set of stones or two. But there may be as many as three sets of stones involved in this. The only common denominator between the sets of stones is that there are 12. Consistently, there are going to be 12 stones. Why 12 stones? Presumably one per Shevet, right? That would make sense. Maybe the men who were designated last week, who didn't seem to have a function, now are going to have a role. They're going to carry, each one will carry a stone, potentially. We'll have to see. But why are 12 stones in particular so important?
Wasn't it also Yaakov?
Yaakov uses 12 stones. Good. Where else do we find 12 stones? You can flip the page. Sorry. By the way, with Yaakov, it doesn't actually say that it's 12 stones. With Lavan, he set up a gal aid, right? A pile of stones as a... Not that I can think of. That doesn't mean it's not there.
You can't think of it?
No.
I'm confident.
How big are these stones? Are they these, like,
how do you know who these guys are? Between each other, it could be like the old man who...
Which would be a bad idea. That would show...
But they didn't know that, it wasn't like... based on strength that you need to be picked.
Well, the question is, if he knows that he's picking them for the stones, then he's going to pick the right people.
Okay.
But yes, so right now...
Was he picking them, or was he Shevet appointing?
Well, presumably he wouldn't give them bad advice, right? If he has in mind that they're to do
this. So he would say we need someone who's strong.
Now, where did these stones go? Where are they going?
We'll have to see. Well, I mean, we don't know. We know almost nothing right now. Right now it's all just like...
In this commandment to take them.
Ah, so then they're just camped out there on Har Eval. Mm-hmm.
Just to take them with them.
Yeah, but I still wanted to know, where else in the Torah do we have sets of 12 stones? Yaakov has been mentioned. The truth is the Torah does not actually say there are 12 there explicitly. We're going to come back to those. But where does the Torah actually say explicitly 12 stones?
Well, it says here,
Avram. No. It's verse number six. Where's Avram? No. Don't. Oh, yeah, number source number six.
Okay,
Simon did not say to look at source number seven yet.
So when was this?
Right, with the micro.
Was this when you crossed the young girls? No.
Because my calligraphy goes on season.
Four.
Rose 24-4, yeah.
It's
a good
class. 12 years.
Okay. Well, it's got to be in the Shmos, for sure.
Yeah. I had it in my white people.
Shmos hopped down
early in the morning and
he
just
like, so he was in
12 pillars.
12
pillars.
12 pillars, it says?
Yes. Yeah, pillars. Mine says 12 pillars. Too.
That's very funny, because all it says in the Hebrew is Yishtem Esvei Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
Ma'aseh Ma'aseh Ma'aseh
No, not at all. No. We use the term that way.
Yeah, that's what
The, because Yaakov, when it says that he sets up the grave for Rachel, it says Matzevet Kurat Rachel Ad Hayom, so the word Matzeva is used there. But that's our borrowing of a much larger term. But when the Torah says in Sefer Devarim that Hashem says, I don't want you to build any Matzevot for me anymore, so the Mefarshim will ask, well, what do you mean? We build Mizbeach Ad Avanim, and their answer is Mizbeach is multiple stones, Matzeva is one stone. So even though they call them a pillar there, it's actually 12 stones. Mishnei Masar Shiftei Yisrael, representing 12 Shvatim, representing. Yeah. Okay. So that's one use of 12 stones, and that is when the Jews received the Torah at Sinai. Right? Next, Shmot Chavchet Chafalef, 28:21. It's in Parshas Tetzaveh.
Yeah,
I just have my hand over it. Yeah. No. No, you want to hold it? Yeah. Okay.
28,
what number? 21. Right. Where are these stones located?
Stone should be.
Right, these are the Urim Tumim on the Hoshen, right? Right? The Kohen Gadol wears this breastplate with 12 stones.
They have their names on them.
And they are one per shaven, very explicitly there. Exactly. So that's another case of 12 stones representing 12 tribes. Then we take 12 stones from the Yardin. We are going to use these 12 stones or some set of 12 stones to build a Mizbeach on Har Eval at the end of the 8th Perek. And the Gemara there is going to say that's 12 that are building the Mizbeach, not just 12 for the writing of the Torah. And then finally, Malachim Aleph Yudchet Lamed Aleph. Classic story.
Oh,
so
that was with Eliyahu.
Bingo. Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel. So what does Eliyahu do with 12 stones?
Well, he built the
Mizbeach,
and the others were
built. But take a look at what it says.
He was, repairing
the Mizbeach. He repaired an old Mizbeach. And what else? Right, he has a ditch around the altar, but isn't there a reference there to 12 stones?
Yeah.
I hope so. Right, once again, he sets up 12 stones according to the number of tribes of Israel. So now, we have, no joke, we have a repeated message, right? We're now seeing this throughout the Torah. We're seeing it starting at Sinai, continuing with the Choshen, continuing with Yehoshua here, and going forward to Eliyahu, of 12 stones, one per shevet. What is the message?
We're all one.
We're all one. That's right. It's a unity message. And then I brought you the Medrash that is in source number 7. So now, yes, you are allowed to look at the Medrash in source number 7. And this is the Medrash that Levi was referring to before, regarding Yaakov. Remember that in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov goes to sleep, it says that he took stones, avanim, Vayasimarasha Sav, and he put them by his head. But then on the other hand, when he wakes up in the morning, it says, Vayikach Es HaEven, he took the stone, So what happened to the multiple stones?
Right.
So anyone here who was in the earlier version of the women's class in Thornhill, the one that we used to do at the Chana Spindel's house, will remember doubtless the Parsha Shir that we did for Parshas Vayetzeh, where we talked about the question of what exactly... Hey, you were there. The
yeah. Some weeks.
What we talked about, I think TK was there this week actually that we did this. The different versions of the story of what happened with these stones, because there are different versions within. On the one hand, this Medrash has one account in source number 7. The Gemara in Chulin Sadi Aleph has a different version of it, and then Rashi actually blends the two versions in his commentary to the Pasuk. So we'd be to see just one version, because this isn't a class about Parshas Vayetzeh now. But or you can go to yutorah.org and catch the audio. Take a look at source number 7. Vayikach me'avnei ha'makom. He took from these stones from that place. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia, v'Rabbanan. There's a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, shnei mesrei avanim. Which is odd, come to think of it. It should either be shnei masar or shnei mesrei, right? Or am I remembering wrong? No, shnei mesrei. We're in the Omer, I should be able to remember my numbers. All right, Shnei Mesrei Avonim, he says. Natal, he took 12 stones. Kach Gazar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shumamid Shnei Masar Shevatim. Yeah, there it is. So too, Hashem decreed that he would have 12 tribes. Amar Avraham Lohem Midan, he said, look, Avraham didn't do it. Yitzchak Lohem Midan, Yitzchak didn't do it. Ani, I, Yaakov speaking, he says, for me, Im Misachos Hein, Shnei Masar Avanim Zulazu. If these 12 stones will join together, Yodei Shani Mamid Yud Beis Shvatim, then I will know that I will have 12 tribes.
Why would he think there? Where
is this? So when was he told this?
Yeah.
Apparently he has some knowledge. Yes.
What is this in his head? He knew there has to be 12 at some point.
Yes.
Is that?
Just like Rachel and Leah have this knowledge also that there are supposed to be 12 Shvatim. Remember the whole thing with Dina and the switching and so on? There is apparently some kind of tradition that goes back at least to that generation, if not earlier, that there will be 12 Shvatim. How do they know? Nevuah, that's the only answer I can give you. We don't find a pasuk anywhere in which they are told you are going to have 12 Shvatim. Yeah, that's the best I can tell you. So here he says, if they blend together, then I will know that I will have 12 Shvatim. Which is kind of counterintuitive. Like, I would have expected that he would have put up one stone and said, if it splits into 12, then I know that I'll have 12 Shvatim. Instead, he puts down 12 stones and says, if they become one, then I know that I'm going to produce 12.
But it's a different, like, analogy, because one splitting into 12 gives you a different... It almost... seems like everyone's splitting and splintering as opposed to coming together.
Yeah,
right?
I hear it.
It's the opposite.
I hear it. It's still funny.
It's also more of a miracle, isn't it? You can take a stone and split it, but mm-hmm. you can't take 12 stones and
make them into one. That's true.
Right.
Okay. So the image here is an image of unity. And of course, the one that you're more familiar with is the account of each, you know, stones fighting with each other, and we want Yaakov to put his head on us or whatever. So, yes, there are the different accounts of what happened. Don't confuse your children. Whatever version they come home from school with is fine.
It's interesting, actually, because they never
stop
fighting. I mean, about who Yaakov's favorite was.
Right.
It started with stones.
Yes. Way, way back. The sibling rivalry is a very embedded thing. It's not something that just springs up overnight.
No, you're not so lucky.
So, the idea here of unity is one that you see in the stones down the line. You see it in Yaakov's vision here, with his stones, that the stones should all be joined together. You see it with the stones on the Choshen. Right? Each Shevet is there, but they're together as one. You see it at Har Sinai with Moshe set up. You see it on Har HaKarmel as well with Yehoshua. And that's one message, but it's not the only message. Those of us who come from countries with other types of currency may be familiar with coins that say on them, E Pluribus Unum. Not in God we trust. That's a whole other discussion.
Sorry.
That's a whole other discussion. No, we're talking about E Pluribus Unum, from many, one. Right? Pluribus, plural, right? Unum, fine. From
that's
many.
That's on the American dollar?
So now you have to ask me to remember whether it's on the dollar bill. I haven't looked at the dollar bill in way too long. So you can bail me out here.
I have 20.
Yes, we still have dollar bills. And we're proud of it.
They're changing over.
Well, you think you're going to get 15. Wouldn't it be better to have it the other way around? From one, you get many.
I don't see it.
Well, it could be by the time you hit the 50, it's not going to be there.
Yeah.
Really, from many one when you're dealing with singles, not when you're dealing with 50. So that one is every man for himself. But it's certainly on the it's certainly there on the currency. In any case, I didn't mean to distract everything. The point is that the idea of from many one doesn't deny the fact that they are many. They are still individuals. They are 12 Shvatim who are descended from four different mothers who each have their own character. You have 12 Shvatim which have their own unique role models within the Shevet. So Dan is going to look at Shimshon, and Asher will have Serach Bas Asher. Each Shevet has its own leaders. Each one occupies its own portion in the land. I brought you here on the sheet. Take a look at source number 8. This is a fascinating point made by Ibn Ezra. The pasuk that I'm referring you to here is the one with the flags for each Shevet. This will become relevant not this Shabbos, but a week from when it's Shabbos Parshas Bamidbar, and you need it to write Torah. So for Shabbos Bamidbar, we're going to learn about how they travel in the wilderness. Is it there? Really? It's not. So it's only on the coins then, not on the bills. Okay, but I'm going to go back to this. The flags under which the Jews travel in the Midbar, the Torah describes them as Ish al diglo be'osos, each one with his own flag, with signs. So what are these signs? Well, Ibn Ezra explains, source number 9, be'osos, simanim hayu b'chol degel v'degel. There were emblems on each flag. The Kadmonenu Amru, and Ibn Ezra, writing in the 11th century, says, our predecessors said, Shahaya ledegel Reuven, is this legal currency anymore? Shahaya degel Reuven, Tsuras Adam, Mikoach Drash Dudaim, that Reuven's flag had the mark of, had the sign of, I should say, a human being, because of the drasha about the Dudaim being mandrakes and that somehow they had the shape of a person, Harry Potter images aside. Ubedegel Yehuda Tsuras Aryeh, and that the flag of Yehuda was like a lion, Kibohim Shilo Yaakov, because that's what Yaakov compared him to, so that each of the flags notes the unique character of the Shevet. I'm just going to pause for a second to note that, yes, on top of the Lincoln Memorial, on the penny, it says Pluribus Unum. You've got on the nickel also. It's there. Okay. Finally, though, these stones, it's okay. The stones on the Choshen, hello. The stones on the Choshen, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, also each one had a unique character, which we understand is associated with that particular Shevet. It's not that happens to be that this one has this stone and that one has that stone, but there's actually an association. So I bring you as an example, source number 10, because I used this in the Medrash here on Tuesdays just a few weeks ago. Rabbeinu Bechaye comments on each of the stones and explains how each one relates to its own Shevet. But here's the example from the third stone on the Choshen. The third stone on the Choshen is called Bereket. But if you take the word Bereket, what does that signify to you? How would you translate Bereket? What other word in Hebrew? Barak, meaning lightning. So that stone, he says, v'huha carbuncula. This is the carbuncle. Carbuncle, not a boil, but carbuncle, a precious gem. Nikres barekes, al shem shenotzetes ke barak umi'irak kiner. It's called the bareket because it shines like lightning and illuminates like a lamp. V'chein targum barkan. The Aramaic there, Onkelos's commentary on the word bareket is barkan. V'hu even shetala Noach bateva, and that's the stone that Noach hung up in the boat. Mimashakasut tzohar ta'asela teva, because the pasuk says you shall make a tzohar for the boat. So in the Medrash class, we had a whole discussion about how do you know that tzohar would actually be a gem? Maybe it was a window, and you know the various elements, and how can a gem actually produce light? And there are three different types of radiance that are associated with gems, and the. You know, which one we're talking about here is a good question. The point isn't that, although I think, yeah, we suggested that it's actually a garnet.
I was just going to say, it's baraket, gemstone, isn't it? Also, it's a garnet.
Right, but garnet is because garnets are said to actually produce life. They have what's called a venturescence. But that's again further afield. But you'll know it as a garnet, not as a carbuncle. The point is the image of each shavet having a stone that is attuned to its character. And the point here, I didn't bring you he goes on much further, but the point in connection to Levi is that Levi is the teacher of Torah. Yeru Mishpatach Liyakov, they shine the light of Hashem by teaching Torah to Bnei Yisrael. So each one has its own character. So the point is that when you say that you're going to have 12 stones representing all of Israel, yes, there's a unity image because they're all together, but there's also the sense of each one has its own traits and its own identity. You don't blend them together to the point where you lose the individual character. So all of this is a subtext in what's going to happen here in this parak and going forward in parak chet with these stones. When they're told to take 12 stones out of the Yarden, there's a message here, which we're going to see, regarding the Jews as a whole. So let's take a look at Perek Dalet, please. Perek Dalet, Psukim Aleph to Gimel, is the start of this adventure that they're going to have with the stones. Vayihi kasher tamu kol hagoy la'avores hayardein. Chapter 4, sentence 1. Yeah.
Yes,
there is.
Right.
Yep. So we have to. So we need to know more about that space.
Like it's like the Yarden, like it's this analogy.
Well, but it's a long time to get across.
Maybe. Yeah. It could really be as simple as that. But the way it's written here, and it was when the nation had completed crossing the Yarden, Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua Lemor, God told Yehoshua to go tell the Jews, Kichu lachem min ha'am shnei masar anashim, ish echad mishavet, take for yourselves from the nation 12 men, one per shevet. Remember that we pointed out before, we've seen this phrase before here, and we said the only place it appears outside of this context in Yehoshua is at the Meraglim, the spies. V'tzavu osam leimor, su'u lachem mizeh mitoch hayarden mimatzav ragle ha-kohanim hachin shtem esrei avonim. Instruct them, take for yourselves from the Yarden, from the place where the Kohanim are standing. And there's actually debate in the commentaries as to whether it means like under their feet or whether it just means around where they were. But take for yourselves shtem esrei avonim, 12 stones. V'ha'avartem osam imachem, and take them with you. And leave them in the place where you are going to stay tonight. That's the opening sequence. So what questions do we have, aside from the question of what this space here is doing? What other questions would you ask about these three psukim? Logical questions.
Well, it's saying take 12 men, but we already did that.
Yeah. So how did Yehoshua know that he's supposed to be doing that? Unless this is a different set of 12? And if so, I still don't know, then what's his first set of 12 there for?
Maybe the first set of 12 mixed up with the whole nation they had to
put their hand together. In other words, he separated 12, it didn't work.
No, they all crossed and they got mishmash and then they had to fight again.
But what were they for?
I don't know.
Okay. And what's the role of these stones? Is this Moshe's set of stones that are going to go with them to Har Eival? If so, why does it say that it's going to the Malon, to the place where they're staying that night?
Well, no, it tells you. Well,
they're coming out of the water.
Yeah, and then?
Until they get to Eival, they're just keeping them in the Malon.
So take them with you to the Malon, and then when you get there, I'm going to tell you to take them with you to Har Eival. Maybe. Well, it's certainly possible.
That would go with what's been happening. Like, they're getting, like, half instruction. Like,
yeah.
But why would Yeshua say, like or Moshe commanded you? Like, why wouldn't he ever just bring that in? You know, as you remember, Moshe mentioned, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, he's not ever referring to that. Like,
right, which he does consistently. When he wants to refer to Moshe, he has no compunction about referring to Moshe. So it's a good point. Yeshua never mentioned. Here, it's Hashem talking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
The truth is, when we saw before that Yeshua said, take 12 men, it was back in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Bet. Right? He said, take for yourselves 12 men. He did not make reference to Moshe then either. Nor did he tell you what they were for. So, first of all, Levi had said, you know, we've been getting these half instructions all along. Right? Now the Aaron is going to go. when you see the Aron, now you should go, and now take the 12 men, and so on. The Rashi actually believes that these instructions were given earlier, before Yehoshua gathered the nation. So that what Yehoshua did, what we saw in the previous parak, was at God's instruction. It's just that the instruction isn't recorded until here, because they're not actually taking the stones until now. Which may help explain why there's a break in the pasuk. So the way you read the pasuk is, and it was when they finished crossing. By the way, God had told Yehoshua to take 12 men and have them take stones. And then we resume with pasuk dalet, and Yehoshua called the 12 men. So that break in the middle of the sentence is, yeah, it's kind of setting apart these instructions that are recalled from before. Red Dock is consistent.
Is that ever common in the Torah? Like, do you see that in other places?
It's
where
common
there's a break like that, and it means that?
Right. It's common to see breaks interpreted as indicating a passage of time. And it's rare that you have break in mid-pasuk, but it's always meant to connote, hey, look at this, there's something going on here. A change of subject, if nothing else.
It just seems very repetitive. I thought there's no extra words ever in the Torah. Like, doesn't this whole parak, like, so many times do you say the same thing? The Kohanim were carrying the Aron, and you're taking 12 people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, keep in mind, you're no longer in Chumash.
Right.
And Navi has different rules. But yes, there's got to be a message.
Even before, it mentions like three times the Kohanim carrying the
Aron. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it was meant to emphasize for us this idea that the Aron is what's causing the miracle, or that Yehoshua and the Kohanim are going to do something special, and so on. So yes, we're going to have to understand what the repetition is about, or we're going to have to try, at any rate. In terms of these instructions, then Rashi says, yeah, the instructions were before. Abarbanel says, could be. Doesn't have to be. I'm good with the idea that Yehoshua set up 12 on his own, and then this is actually a different set of 12, potentially. Not a big deal. Rashi insists it's the same 12 as above. That Rashi is adamant about. Malbim is adamant the other way. If you take a look on your sheet, the last source I gave you, source number 11, a rarity that we will actually get through all the sources I put on the sheet. Extra work for next week. So Malbim says, Milvad hashtem esrei anashim shalakach Yehoshua lios edim alanis. Aside from the 12 men Yehoshua had selected to be witnesses to the miracle, tziva lo Hashem likach yud beis anashim. Hashem instructed him to take 12 men. Well, the Malbim has now helped us out. Because the Malbim is the first one to tell us what Yehoshua's 12 were for, if they weren't for the stones.
They're witnesses to the name. For each Shevet to go back and tell them what happened, because they can't see it.
Exactly.
Because now and the Aron isn't 2 kilometers in front of them, where they can all see it. Everyone's gone past it.
There's that, and I think it's also the idea of a designated witness. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to have someone official whose job it is to say, this is what happened, and I saw it, and Yehoshua charged me for that job.
Yeah.
If you go back to Perek Gimel, to Pasuk Yud Bet, maybe this fits now. We can understand the way the sentences flowed. Right? Yehoshua has just told the people, the Aron of Hashem, Adon Kol Ha'aretz, is passing before in the Yarden. Now take, in Pasuk Yud Bet, now take 12 men from Shiftei Yisrael, one per Shevet, and it will be that when the Aron enters the Yarden is going to split. And the point is, he's telling the 12 men, watch for this to happen. So Malbim understands that they're actually a separate set of 12, they're witnesses, and now we're having a new set of 12 who are going to be stone carriers. That's the way that he takes it. As opposed to Rashi, who says, no, it's the same set of 12, and they have a job to do, and the instructions were given to Yehoshua earlier. So they're told to take these stones. Mitzudas David comments that that they're actually going back into the Yarden after leaving it in order to get the stones. What's the goal of setting up these stones? So Ralbag says it's simply a monument, a memorial. However, Rashi takes the view, which Liba suggested before, and we're going to have to come back to when we get to Perek Chet, like we're going to actually remember Perek Dalet when we get there, but theoretically, the Rashi's view is these stones will be used to build the Mizbeach on Har Eval. They're going to build the Mizbeach, They're going to bring korbanos, they're going to dismantle them as Baal, and they're going to bring the stones to Gilgal, and they're going to write the Torah on them all in one day.
Wow.
That's what he says, all in one.
How far is Gilgal from where they are? But how far is Gilgal from where they are?
So apparently it's a day's travel.
And you're carrying heavy stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Can they carry it?
Can
they push it like an elk? Do they have to actually
roll
that? They've got animals to carry them or something.
Well, we're going to have to talk about that, actually, how that happens, because that's not so clear cut. Take a look at what happens here. We're going to have to come back to that, because we're not done with these stones. Like I said, the entire paragraph is going to be about these stones. All we have right now are instructions given now or given earlier about designating 12 men and having them take stones. Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. We're going to read Dalet through Zion now as a block. Vayikra Yehoshua el shneim ha'asar ish asher hechin mibnei Yisrael. Yehoshua called, notice, shneim ha'asar, the 12. Right. So the 12 men that he had prepared from the Jews, because at least according to Rashi's read, it's the same ones that he had designated before.
Right.
Ish echad mishave. Once again, this phrase, which doesn't appear anywhere else besides the Maraglim, one per shevet. Vayomer lahem Yehoshua, and Yehoshua says to them, Iru lifnei Aron Hashem Elokechem el toch hayardein. Pass before the Aron of Hashem your God to the middle of the Yardein. Veharimu lachem ish even achas al shichmo. And pick up for yourselves, each man one stone on his shoulder. L'mispar shivtei v'nei Yisrael, according to the number of the shvatim of the tribes of Israel, once again with that emphasis that each one represents a shevet. L'man tiyezos os bekir b'chem, so that this shall be a sign in your midst. Ki yishalun b'neichem machar le'mor maha avanim ha'ele lachem, when your children tomorrow are going to ask, what are these stones for you? Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Right? There you go. Ma'avodah zos lachem, ma'avanim ma'ele lachem. Va'amartem lahem, and this is what you're going to tell them. Asher nechresu me'mei ha'yardein mipnei aron bris Hashem, that the rivers and the waters of the Jordan were split in front of the aron, be'avro ba'yardein, when it crossed the yardein, nechresu me'mei ha'yardein, the river split. V'hayu ha'avanim ha'ele lezikaron livnei Yisrael ad olam. And these will be a memorial for the Jews forever. Questions about these psukim?
What happened to these stones?
Right.
How are they going to be assigned?
Right, so that's one question we're going to have to get to is what does he mean when he says it's a memorial forever? What does forever mean?
Obviously, we don't see it now.
Is it like the Teva? Well, why does he have to say, each of you take up according to the number of the tribes? There are only 12 of them, so.
Right. What
are they taking up 12
it?
Each? Is each man taking up 12 stones? No.
No. Oh, that'll be nice.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in the Hebrew, but if you read it in the English, it's like you're each taking according to the number of tribes. So it would be like,
yeah,
I'm taking 12 and you're taking 12 because we're all.
No, it says one stone apart on his shoulder.
Yeah, Ish Evan Achat al Shichmo sort of clarifies that.
Yeah,
right.
But there
are a couple of things here that are interesting to look at. Now, take a look at the end of the parak. Psukim Chaf Aleph to Chaf Gimel. Obviously, we're not getting to this today, but I want to show the question. This is where Yehoshua addresses the nation regarding the stones that they take out of the Yardin. Okay? Vayomer el b'nei Yisrael le'mor. He told Yehoshua, told the Jews in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, sentence 21. Asher yishalun b'neichem macharas avosam le'mor moha avanim ha'ela. Your kids are going to ask their fathers tomorrow, what are these stones? Vodatem es b'neichem le'mor. And you shall tell your kids, saying, Vayabasha avar Yisrael es ha'yardein hazad. The Jews crossed this Yardin on dry land. Asher hovish Hashem Elokeichem es mei ha'yardein b'neichem ad avrachem. That Hashem actually dried up the Yardin before you until you crossed. Kasher asah Hashem Elokeichem liyamsuf asher hovish b'paneinu ad avreinu, as he did for the yamsuf, drying it out until we crossed. Is this not redundant?
Yeah, but he's telling B'nai Yisrael before he's telling the 12 men.
Ah, that's interesting. So earlier it was just an address to the 12 men.
Am I right? Isn't he just telling the 12?
Could be. You could read it that way for sure.
Vayikra Yehoshua el shneim ha'asar ish asher But Yom Lehem Yahshua, so...
Right.
I don't know.
Okay, maybe. Maybe so he's addressing different parties. Could be. Another question. Hashem tells him, as we see here, that the... Or as we saw, I should say, in Pasuk Gimel... Take up out of the Yarden, from where the Kohanim stand, 12 stones. Right? That's what he tells him to do. What does Yahushua say, and what's the difference between what Yahushua says and what God said?
He adds a little stuff about the monument forever and the children.
Oh,
and
the reason. True, but I'm looking back at his actual instruction to take the stones in Pasuk Hay.
He says, "El Tachay Yarden." He doesn't say from the feet of the Kohanim, or
okay.
He doesn't take it from the Yarden.
Right. Oh, well, God says Mito. God says Mito Chayarden. Yeah, that's pretty good. What else?
Tells him to carry on their shoulder.
Yeah.
Right. And Ish Evan Achat Al Shichma.
Right.
Each one is taking one, as opposed to the instruction from Hashem, which just said
12 people.
12 people should go in and take stones. For all I knew, they were all going to heft out one huge stone.
Well, maybe what Hashem said, they didn't understand what he said, and he knew more specific instructions.
Maybe. Actually, no, I'm sorry.
But
Hashem did say 12 stones. Hashem did say 12 stones.
But maybe two could have each, they could have taken 12 stones, but they could have helped each other carry them or something, not each one on the shoulder.
I mean, you have the image of the Meraglim where they carry the grapes together, right? Like on the Ketam bottle.
Where did they get it from?
So, the question here is, what is Yahushua doing? Why is he varying? Is there a redundancy going on between here and the end of the parak? Are these the same 12 men as before or not? There's quite a bit to see. So,
maybe
God willing, we will pick up with that.
I mean, he has the reason. Yeah. I mean, God doesn't say the reason.
And he has the reason.
Mind, you know.
Right. So, that's another element. So, God willing, next time, we'll come back to that.